Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. My guest this week is Julie Mathers, the founder of Flora and Fauna, an online store specialised in vegan and eco-friendly products. After 25 years working in retail, Julie decided to take her experience as a retailer, combine it with her passion for the environment and animal welfare, and create a business that was conscious of its impact on the world to drive change for the better. She's been increasingly frustrated working for retailers who weren't responsible for their actions and wanted to know how products are produced and what they're made of, and who makes them, and by the way, what the customer expects. So Julie launched her business, Flora and Fauna, in 2014 with 30 brands and 500 products. Now, they have a huge range with over 8,000 products and 300 brands, sourcing the best ethical, low-waste and vegan skincare, food, fashion and lifestyle products in the country. I'm going to ask Julie about what are the important aspects of her business life that made her successful. For example, the ethic of hard work. How important is that? The concept of thinking like a proprietor. How does she do that and how important is that? How important is the value of being simple and elegant in the way you express your messaging both online and, by the way, in your product lines? And I want to get inside her head around those little one percenters that make businesses really successful. What are examples of what everyone keeps talking about? One percenters, one percenters. What is a one percenter? That's what we're going to talk about, so let's get into it. Julie Mathers, welcome to The Mentor. And I have spoken to you before in the past, but I have to introduce Julie right now. Is that, I'll be honest, I know she is one of Alexandra Sloan, who's the marketing director at Facebook and Instagram, one of their stand-up faves of all time. I know that because I love the way you guys use Facebook and Instagram, but welcome to The Mentor.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Mark. Delighted to be here.
A lot of people know who you are, you know, and you guys are quite prevalent and in some respects quite prolific when it comes to social mediums, but I'll put that aside for just for the moment. Everybody wants to know, how did you become Flora and Fauna? There's lots of copycats of you guys around at the moment, which is nice. That's the greatest form of admiration is emulation. A lot of people emulating you guys. Kicked this off in 2014, but I want to go back a little bit further than that. I want to go back and see your story. Like, what is the story of Julie Mathers? Like, where do you come from? And obviously you're English, you've got an English accent, but where do you come from? And how did you end up becoming a retailer online for something that is environmentally and socially responsible? Tell me the story.
Yeah. I grew up in Manchester. In the UK, so
paint us a picture of Manchester. I mean, like, a lot of people wouldn't know what Manchester is.
Oh yeah, so Manchester, north of England, and I actually grew up, and I say Manchester, I sort of grew up in the southern bit of Manchester in Cheshire. So very leafy, quite rural. I think if you watch Coronation Street, if anyone watches Coronation Street, that's Manchester in a nutshell, really. Lots of semi-detached housing, and
is it working class sort of area?
Oh, it's kind of.
Middle class.
My mum would say no. Yeah. She didn't. No, middle class, Julie. Yeah. But it's kind of working to middle class.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. It was north of England, which is sort
exactly.
of. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not like being in Surrey or something.
No, we're not in Surrey. Yeah. No, definitely not in Surrey.
So you're talking about, so the equivalent in New South Wales, you're probably talking about, middle western suburbs of Sydney.
Yeah. Exactly.
Where normal people are.
Normal people. Yeah. Very normal people. And it's quite funny because if I ever go back to the UK, and I've been here 11 years now, the neighbour who's three doors down, who I wouldn't have seen for 15 to 20 years, will go, "All right, Julie, how are you?" As if nothing's happened. It's that kind of place.
Staunch.
Yeah.
Very staunch. Yeah.
Nothing changes. A lot of window curtain twitches, seeing what's going on with the neighbours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All of that.
Sounds like an episode of Peaky Blinders. Your background, though, your personal background. Yeah. So you grew up there, you went to school there, obviously. What about your family? What's the deal with your family? What about mum and dad? What was their deal?
Mum and dad. So mum and dad, really hardworking. And it's funny because I've reflected on this recently where I've gone, God, where do I get my work ethic from? Because I work crazy hours.
Because that is actually a big question in business.
Yeah.
Where does someone get their work ethic from? Or how do I develop a work ethic that makes me successful?
Yeah, and it's mum and dad. So dad, 73 now, he's always worked for himself. He's a painter and decorator. He now believes he's part-time because he doesn't work Sundays. So he works 6 days a week. And he's always worked incredibly hard, but also the nicest.
And consistently, I'd say.
And consistently. Yeah. And consistently. So the only times where he's been in a bit of strife is during recession.
Yep.
But then I was a young child, so I didn't really know what was going on anyway. But he's worked incredibly hard throughout his life and is also just the nicest bloke. Like, my dad is a lovely, lovely man. Mum has equally worked really hard. So I grew up, and I think this is probably where I get a bit of my independence from. I grew up with, my granddad owned a dairy and my mum was a milkman or a milk person.
Milk person.
Yeah, exactly.
Milk lady.
Milk lady. She was a milk lady. She was the only woman in the business doing it, and she got up at... And she did this from the age of four. She basically went to go and help my granddad out for a week or two. And she was there 20 years. And she'd get up at 2 a.m. in the morning. She'd go and deliver the milk for the day. And I went with her growing up many times. You know, we'd be dragged in and you can go and deliver milk as well. She'd get back about midday. And then she'd clean the house. She'd pick us up from school and do all of that. And then at some point, sleep. But she worked incredibly hard. And she did that 6 days a week. I think Sunday was the only day she got off. And I grew up with both parents doing that, but also both parents not earning a lot of money either. And so kind of having to scrape to get things together. So we didn't really go on many holidays.
But you probably didn't suffer either.
But we didn't suffer, no. No, exactly. I didn't feel like I'm not someone who has a desire for things.
You don't have a chip on your shoulder either. You don't feel like, oh, shit, like the world's been really cruel to me. Therefore, I'm going to be really responsive and make myself into becoming a successful person.
Yeah, no, I actually think I had a great childhood. Very tough, very hard. We didn't get to do many things. But I had two absolutely loving parents who loved myself and my sister to bits and really sort of instilled great values in us.
I want to talk about it because that's it. I often do presentations where I talk about this ethic of hard work, and people go, oh, well, it's sort of nearly a proverb, you know, you work hard, you do well. But like, you know, you just said something very interesting. Both your parents worked long hours consistently, and it's not what your parents tell you, but it's what you see as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
We become what we see from our parents. If we're going to get anything from our parents, it's what we see them do, not what they tell us they're going to do, or not what they tell us what we should be doing. It's what they do. We're not conscious of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up something similar to that, but you know, I was not even really conscious of what they were doing. It was just, oh, well, that's what you do. You go to work and you work hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think you work hard. You just go to work.
Just do it.
Yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
So with your work ethic, do you find that it's from what you saw?
100%.
So if you've got someone, if you're talking to someone out there who's looking to set up a business and be successful and they're finding it hard to get out of bed in the morning and that sort of thing, I mean, what would you say to them? Like, how do you get these people to get this work ethic? It's not about being consciously hardworking, but what would you say to them? How would you get them out of their bad habits?
So, you know, I've had two conversations that I can recall quite vividly. Somebody, a friend of mine who set up a business the same time as me, and he said to me, he goes, oh, Julie, because we sort of did a bit of, I grew quite quickly and he didn't. And he goes, oh, you know, I just don't know what I need to do. And I said, well, I said, you've got to work really hard. I said, you've got to... Someone said something to me once, you've got to have a bit of mongrel in you. And that's always really stuck with me. Because I'm like, yeah, you've got to be able to work hard and to do what you need to do. And he said, oh, but I really like my weekends and I like to do things. And I said, well, you can forget that. I said, if you really want to make this work, you have to absolutely make sacrifices.
So you've got to love making it work more than you love your weekends.
100%. Yeah. And that's very much, for me, I don't see work as work. And another friend of mine, she called me last week and she goes, I just need a bit of advice because she's got a skincare business and we helped her out by getting rid of some of her stock because blah, blah, blah. Anyway, she said to me, she goes, I'm not sure what to do with it. And I said, well, she goes, I kind of feel like, should I revive it? And I said, well, do you want to go around again with this? Do you want to do it again? She goes, oh, I'm not sure I do. Well, I said, well, there's your answer. I said, if you can't put in the hard yards to do this, don't bother. And so I'm a bit blunt with people. And I go, if you don't want to do this and if you're not prepared to make sacrifices and real sacrifices, and if you're not prepared to work till midnight and beyond at times, then don't bother.
Yeah, go get a job.
Go get a job. Go work for someone else.
No, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just say you're not suited for it.
That's right.
Because too many people fail in business largely because they're not prepared to put in the yards.
Yeah. And we've put in the yards now for 6 years. And it doesn't let up.
Because it's not a matter of patience, is it? It's just a matter of just doing what I'm doing every day. This is what I'm doing. I mean, people say, you've got to be patient. Well, the outcome is you're seen as being patient. But it's really, I'm not a conscious patient person. I would say in hindsight I am patient, but I don't think, well, now Mark, be patient. I don't think that.
I just
get up and do what I've got to do today.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to put it to these people? Stop thinking about being patient because we're all impatient.
Yeah.
Stop thinking about what you're missing out on, but think about what you're doing.
Think about what you're doing. Get excited about what you're doing and be prepared to do everything ethically within, you know, don't go and screw people over, but be prepared to do what you need to do to get to where you need to get to and work hard. And I think the thing for me is, I talk about this with my husband quite frequently because he works at Flora and Fauna as well. And if we just started and we just sort of went, yeah, let's go on the mill and just do what we're doing and blah, 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 we wouldn't be the size we are. But I'm constantly coming up, because I love what I do, I'm constantly coming up with new ideas. I'm going, oh, right.
So what comes first, Julie? I want to know, because that's very important. What comes first? Is it the idea that generates excitement, or is it the excitement that generates the idea? So how do you do this, coming up with these new ideas all the time, these new, you know, new product lines or just new things to make the business just keep humming? What generates what?
They both work a bit together, but I'm listening to my customers all the time.
Right.
All the time. And that's where you get your ideas from. You listen to them, you talk to them. I get very invigorated by talking to our community and customers. And it's how I started my career. And it's what I love and it's why I do what I do right now. And I often see problems and I go, well, there's a problem. We can fix it. And then I go, right, we'll go and fix it in this way. And I'll normally come up with something quite blue sky and big, and then I'll rein it into something that we can actually achieve. But that's when I get very excited. I look at things and go, well, there's a problem with recycling. Well, what can we actually do about that realistically? Because we can't do something that is just pie in the sky thinking. We've got to do something that is manageable and also that's something that is really easy for people to understand and get their head around. And so I get myself onto a bit of an exciting track with that one. And that keeps me fueled in some ways. Because I think if I was just doing the doing and, you know, going through the motions every day and going, great, I run a retail business and that's fantastic. I'm someone who'd get bored.
I just want to recap on three things that I've just heard you say. So, you know, business owners are always asking me, you know, what are the things that are, you know, required to be successful in business? You know, I can only draw my own experiences, but I just want to draw on your experiences now. So you just said three really important things. So the first one is, no matter what you're doing, I don't give a shit whether you're building, you know, a cybersecurity system for the government, or you're running a hairdressing salon, or it doesn't matter whether you're doing Flora and Fauna, you're running Yellow Brick Road, or you're running a mentor, whatever it is, there is the ethic of hard work. You must be, that is a common denominator in every success story. You must work hard. What that means is just being consistently at the plow daily. And you don't stop until you've done what you've got to do.
Yeah.
So it's a very basic, simple premise. But number one, hard work and understanding the ethic of hard work. So you if you're a business person out there and you're listening to this, you just heard what Julie said. What I'm getting out of this, what I get out of all the people I speak to, is you must understand what the ethic of hard work is. Now, Julie's lucky because she grew up that way. So she was socially developed by seeing it with her own parents. If you haven't had that advantage, then you have to sit down and intellectualize this, get comfortable with it. If you're not comfortable with it, go get a job. But if you are comfortable with it, that's the way you got to do it once you understand. That's the first thing. That's the first thing she said. The second thing she just said, something really, really interesting, is that what gets her excited and builds, and from that she builds new ideas. There are, and she gets it from her customer feedback. That is the hallmark of what I call thinking like a proprietor. A lot of people in business, whatever the business might be, do not think like a proprietor. Proprietors think the way Julie's explaining. You must think like a proprietor. Proprietor says, how can I make sure that my customer's more happy when they come into my coffee shop compared to the coffee shop 50 metres down the road? Well, if you're thinking about the customer, you say, well, a good proprietor or a person who thinks as a proprietor doesn't think, how can I make more money out of that person? A good proprietor says, what does my customer want when they walk in at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. in the morning and get for a cup of coffee? Well, they want me to know their name. They want me to remember what type of coffee they drink. They want me to have a nice, comfortable, warm premises. How can I make it better? That's what you're saying, yeah?
Yeah.
Customer feedback. I mean, in your case, is a bit more sophisticated, a lot more sophisticated. You probably do special surveys and all that sort of stuff, and you find out what the type of product is, and you've got quite complex products, even though they're simple products, but they're quite complex.
Yeah.
And the third thing you said, so we've got hard work, thinking like a proprietor. And if you're not prepared to do this, don't become a business person. It's got to be this. These are common traits of great, successful business owners. Hard work ethic, understanding and being prepared for it. Two, thinking like a proprietor in everything you do in running your business. And the third one, which is a really good one, is whatever your product is, it doesn't matter how complex it is, make sure you've got a simple explanation. It's got to be simple. So Julie just showed me something there. She showed me a razor that she's developed. As soon as she showed it to me, I loved it. It's retro because I remember having one of these when I was just a young man, first started to shave. That was what the shave looked like. But the current shaver, a current shaver that would not be in Julie's shelf, online or either physical, she won't have a plastic disposable razor thing because you use it once or twice, you throw the bloody thing away. What this is a steel razor, which is exactly the one I used to have. You unscrew it, and why it's so simple is you just take the top off. Conceptually simple. You put there's a razor goes in here, you screw it back on, and then you don't throw anything away other than the razor once it's been used. Mm. Is that right?
Yep, that's it.
Very simple product. But not only is it simple, but it's actually quite elegantly expressed. So simplicity builds elegance for me.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to achieve, elegance. Elegance in your product and or service and the way you express it elegantly is very fucking important. This is an example of elegance and it's simplicity in its best form. And it so happens to be, it's actually quite beautifully built.
Yeah. And if we want people to shift to this, we have to make people change and we can't give them the stick approach. We've got to give them the carrot.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's attractive.
And it's attractive.
I mean, I quite love it.
That's like, right.
This best expresses and explains Julie's business.
Yeah.
Of, I don't know, I hate the word eco-friendly, but whatever. It's responsible.
It's responsible. Exactly.
It's we're not throwing anything away. But you know, someone might say, "Oh, well, yeah, but you had to build a steel mill to."
Yeah,
but
oh,
that's
yeah,
a, yeah, that. Okay, that's fine. But it's actually, it's clever and it's efficient. It's probably the best way to look at it. I mean, to some extent, well, things that I'm environmentally uncomfortable with are largely inefficient.
Yeah.
You know, let's take the word environmentally uncomfortable and just say, I just don't like inefficient things. So this is very efficient. Yeah. Like people might think, oh, disposable is not efficient.
Because you've got to get another one.
We have been convinced by manufacturers over the last 20 years that If it's disposable, it's efficient. We go, wham, throw it away.
Yeah.
That's not fucking efficient. This is efficient.
Yeah.
And elegant and expressed simply and beautifully. So they're three things to our listeners. Understand the ethic of hard work, and Julie's put it beautifully. Two, think like a proprietor. If you want to own this business, and by the way, if you want to be employed in someone's business, you've got to start thinking like a proprietor too. And there's a special way of doing that. And then finally, make sure you can express things simply and elegantly and efficiently, which is, you know, like the best outcomes. I mean, I would like to ask you this.
Yeah.
You guys are brilliant on Facebook and Instagram, but when it comes to those environments, the messaging still has to be simple.
Very, very simple.
Because people won't get it.
No. And it comes down to things. Because I've now worked in retail for a long time. Not far off 30 years now. And I've worked in many different retailers, and crikey, did people make things complicated.
Yeah.
And it comes down to simple things like promotions. And I worked in a fashion retailer for a small amount of time, to be honest. And geez, do they make it complicated? Because they go, right, we're going to do a spend and save. So if you spend over 50, you get 5% off. If you spend over 100, you get 15. And I said on multiple occasions, people don't actually understand percentages. It actually doesn't mean a lot to people. So just make it simple and just go 20% off. Boom. Just make it easy.
Well, can you tell me why is it these marketing people are like that? Can you explain that to me?
I think they're constantly trying to look for new. They
Do you think they overthink things?
I think they overthink it. I also think this is where they don't know their customer, because they come up with ideas and you just go, no, that's absolutely nuts. And there's different ways that you can look at it. And I think it's a blunt tool often that is used instead of going, well, let's come up with that safety razor, because that's actually what people want. So if you come up with that, you actually don't need to discount it, because it's something that people are after right now. And this is being close to your customer and knowing what they want rather than trying to sell, you know, trying to discount stuff. It's like at the moment, we've got hand sanitizer, as probably the world has. Everyone's got way too much hand sanitizer. Doesn't matter how much we discount it, can't shift it. So we just, it'll go at some point.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's just a call you make in the world, and so be it. But you have to understand your customer, and you've got to look at the data, you've got to look at the feedback, but you've also just got to talk to them as well. Some of the most valuable things that I do is, and it's why I love having a physical store, is just talking to customers. And I'm constantly going through our customer inbox, and we've got a team that manage all of this, but I like to understand what they're saying. And I think it's really...
And you've got to ask questions for that, haven't you?
And you've got to ask questions.
You can't just read what they've hit you up with, because it could mean a lot of things. Well, yeah. We're going to go to the break, and we're going to listen to our sponsor, but when I come back for the break, I want to talk to you about this. I want to talk about where the name Flora and Fauna come from. I want to talk about how you use Facebook and Instagram. I want to talk about your product range. I want to talk about what the ethic of the whole place is, and what's your purpose of your business. I mean, what are you personally trying to achieve? And then importantly, I want to talk about how you assess your customers. That's because I have a really strong view on customer assessment and getting the customer to tell me what they want. Particularly in a business like yours, where you've got something like 7,000 lines of products or something, would that be right? How many?
Got over 8,000 now.
8,000 lines of products. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's important. I mean, because you don't have too many, because it's unwieldy.
Yep.
And then at the same time, you want to have what your customers need.
Yeah.
Because you're like an aggregation platform of all things to all people in terms of people who follow you or who come to your shop.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. We've got 300 plus brands, including our own brand. And we go across many different categories, so makeup to skincare to body and hair to home products and so many different categories. So we sort of, we're a huge platform. We stock everything, so we don't drop ship. We stock because I'm a true blue retailer, so I believe in owning the customer.
Yep.
And also getting things out quickly. We're very much a platform for brands. Or I like to call us a platform for purpose, actually.
Yeah.
Because we're so much more than selling stuff.
Yeah, you're not there trying to just sell someone else's product. You've got an objective.
Correct.
In relation to what product you sell and to who your customer is.
Yes. And, we're absolutely not just there to sell product. And those that come in just wanting to sell product are the ones that go, oh, well, this isn't working, so we'll discount it.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's still not working. And we've seen lots come in and go, and they haven't been retailers before, and they don't necessarily understand how to do that, or they don't understand the customer or whatever it is. we're there, I view us as a bit of a community and a bit of solving solutions in general, one of which is products. But then there's also diversity in the workplace. There are so many different... I want us to be a better retailer and better business all round. And so from that, it's what we sell, but it's who we employ, it's how we employ them, it's what we do with our waste, how we get our energy. There's all of those different things. And those are things which I get excited about because I look at things and I go, could we do that better? Yeah, we can. Well, how do we do that better?
And better means something not necessarily faster or et cetera. Better means something different. Better means something different to you, maybe to a lot of other people too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. What I view as better may be absolutely different to other folk. It depends how you view it. I look at it in terms of going, right, well, we're sending, I'm making these numbers up, by the way, three tons of plastic waste to our recycling people, which is just packaging waste each year. How do we make that two? How do we make that one? How do we eliminate it? Because for me, that's better. That's less waste. But that might be different to other people. Other people might go, well, how do I make it cheaper? Because for them, it's better.
Yeah.
Cheaper to dispose of. Whereas you've got to figure out what your better is.
And stick to it.
And stick to it.
Yeah.
Be relentless, relentless over it.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And don't bow at any point.
I like that concept of being relentless.
Yeah.
I mean, I refer to it as ruthless. When I say ruthless, I don't mean ruthless, horrible ruthless. I just mean ruthless to a purpose.
Yeah. So
you have an objective, be ruthless to the objective.
Yeah.
Don't accept anything 10% beyond or 10% underneath. You get your objective done and be ruthless about it, the way you go about it. It's about the way you go about things. And that doesn't mean to be horrible to people. We're going to go to the break. We'll come straight back. And I want to talk to Julie Mathers from Flora and Fauna about her business and all the parts that make her business really successful. I particularly want to know about how she assesses what customers are looking for. I'm back here with Julie Mathers from Flora and Fauna. I just want to know, is it floraandfauna.com.au or is it floraandfauna.com? Pardon my ignorance.
.com.au.
.com, good.
Can't get the .com.
Okay. The name. Where did you get, why did you have Flora and Fauna? I mean, me growing up as a kid, there was a chapter in Harry Messel's science book, which is a green science book that most kids in this country used. And there was a whole chapter on it called Flora and Fauna. And I thought, what the hell are those two words? I had no idea what they were, but I do now. Yeah. Tell me about it.
I would love to say that there was some real magic to this. But the reality is when I was coming up with the concept of the business, it was like, at the time, it was very much sort of, okay, well, I love animals and I love the environment. And so how can we get that into two words? And how can we get that into a business name? And and we went through different words and we go, oh no, that one's gone. Can't have that one. The URL's taken
on
that one.
The default name.
It's a bit, well, it's just like, I think I can remember, and this is where I work really, really well with my husband, because you just start bouncing ideas off each other and you go, oh no, that's not very good. Oh no, that doesn't work. Oh no, that's not great. And then you go, Flora and Fauna. That's brilliant. That's great. That sticks. And that just felt really good. It felt like it was meant to be.
Well, it's interesting. The name, at least here in Australia, I can't talk about anywhere else, but as I said, it's a name, we grew up with that name. So it was a terminology. It was a thing we learned at school. So Flora and Fauna wasn't probably not something we would ordinarily use in our normal language.
Yeah.
But you know, they're Latin words. Yeah, but at the same time, it's a phrase we know.
Yes.
So therefore we'll remember it. I mean, I keep saying to people, oh, what business name should I have? I don't give a fuck what business name you have, but have a name that people will remember.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, just make it a word that's memorable. They don't even have to like it.
Yeah.
They've got to like your product and your service, but as long as they remember it. I mean, like Virgin's a good example. Like, a lot of people hate that name when it first came out because of the connotations.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, they remembered it.
Yeah.
And it's got some strong letters in it. I-R-U-R-G-I-N, they're strong sounds. Flora and Fauna, they are strong sounding letters and syllables.
Yeah.
It's strong, therefore it sticks in your brain. Flora and Fauna is something we're familiar with. Virgin is something we're familiar with. I mean, I did the same with the name Wizard when I had the Wizard business. Wizard, and Wizard is something in Australia is a common word, you know, in terms of sporting wizardry and financial wizardry. So if you're looking for a name, come up with something that people will at least remember. There's a reason why they remember it, whatever it is. So, and yeah, that your name, I think Flora and Fauna is a great name.
Awesome.
And most of us can spell it too. Like, it's got to be able to be spelt.
Yes.
Because I've got to be able to type it in these days.
Well, this is it. You've got to be able to type it in. And it's really, we do get some misspellings of it, but we've got those covered in Google. But it's really interesting that you say that. It's got to be different. It's got to be memorable, because we see a lot of businesses starting in our space. And I mean, particularly at the moment, actually, there's lots of people going, I'm going to start an online business. But the names are all a variation on a theme. Eco, natural. Yeah. They're all a bit samey-samey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not memorable.
They're not memorable. And yeah, and you kind of go, even I go, oh, well, what's that one called again? Is it Eco something or the other? And they're all just a bit same. So go and stand out there and be different and own it
And don't be silly. Like, I remember I did when I did the Mentor TV show, one of the episodes was about this family who had a real estate business, and they decided to set up their real estate business in Queensland, North Queensland, or a little past Brisbane, and they decided to call it Ubiquitous Real Estate. And I thought, what the fuck? I mean, and the reason why they chose the name Ubiquitous is because the young daughter in the daughter in the family, she wasn't young, she's in her 20s or late 20s, she heard the word Ubiquitous mentioned on a news show, and she thought, looked it up because she didn't know what it meant, and she thought, that sounds like a really smart name. The bottom line is, someone can't spell Ubiquitous, there's no point calling your business Ubiquitous, and not many people can spell Ubiquitous. So I actually said, and I want to get onto this with you now.
Yeah.
I actually said, okay, let's go around in Brisbane, north of Brisbane, and let's survey people, you and me, with a camera and a microphone, and ask them, A, do they know what Ubiquitous means? Do they know what it means? And B, can they spell it? Because, you know, if you can't type it into Google,
yeah,
you're not going to find me. And you can't type it in if you can't spell it. And if you don't know what it means, well, fuck, that's even worse. And, you know, Ubiquitous means like everywhere. But still, like everywhere, real estate, Ubiquitous real estate. I mean, like, in the end, I got it to change the name to Moreton Bay Real Estate because they come from Moreton Bay.
Oh, perfect.
Like, hello. Come from, call yourself Moreton Bay Real Estate. That was available. They didn't even look that up. So in terms of Flora and Fauna, I mean, I get why you called it. It's a great name. But customer discussions. You talked about it a bit earlier, which is why you like having your shop in the front of your business now. But how important is it to talk to your customers, actually speak to your customers in front of them even, not just behind a screen?
Mm.
How important is it to you, for you, and how important is it to all our small business listeners to know what your customers actually thinking?
It's crazily important.
What do you do then?
So what we do a variety of things, and we did this from day one. And I think because I'm so customer focused, is that they're our world, really. So I've kind of instilled it in day one. So we talk to them in any which way. And my view is, however they want to talk to us, we'll talk to them that way. So let's not give them.
By whatever means you mean.
By whatever means. So if they want to talk to us on email, we'll do that. If they want to talk to us on Instagram message or Facebook message, or if they want to talk to us on live chat or on the phone. Everyone's got their very different ways of communicating. So let's not force everyone into one funnel because it suits us.
Or because it's the cool thing to do. We should be all digital.
I know.
Push them all down the digital funnel.
Exactly. We have customers who want to phone us. They phone us for the very first couple of years. You make these decisions. I gave my phone number out to a customer so she would call me quite regularly, actually, Elizabeth. And she would say to me, Julie, what's new? Tell me what's new. I just want to know what's new. And she spent $400 a time. But she just wanted me to tell her. And she didn't want to go online. She didn't want to do it. She just wanted me to do it for her. And it's a very personal service. And at one point I had to go, I kind of need to pass you over to Brianne in customer care now. But that's what she does. She's my age. She's not a digital native, but she prefers to shop that way. So you have to allow people to shop as and talk to you as they want to. Some people want to go on live chat. So something we've done recently, and it's actually come about because of COVID, is we've extended our hours. So we used to work 7:30 till 5, and those were the hours that customers could talk to us. Now, with COVID, we've had more volume, and we've had to socially distance the team, particularly in the warehouse. So we've gone to two shifts. So we now operate a shift 7 till 2:50, and we operate 3 till 9:30. And we've changed our customer care hours to match that as well. So now customers can talk to us until 9:30 at night, which they love, because we're kind of going, well, you don't have to talk to us in these hours. You can talk to us in all of these hours.
It's funny, you know, that's very interesting you should say, because I had a conversation with the guys at Yellow Brick Road the other day, and what's happened in the banking system is that the banks have put everybody, a lot of people work in banking environments now, work from home, like everybody. And therefore, the approval process of your application for a home loan doesn't happen between 9 and 5 like it used to pre-COVID. And what's happening is a lot of the people who do the approving, a lot of them, they work from home. So 3 o'clock, they go off and they go pick their kids up from school, or they might, I don't know, take their dog for a walk or do something with their family. Yeah. And then they have dinner and they clock back on at 7. And they work till 7 till 10, like a couple of hours, which means they pick up your file, your application. So I've said to my guys, okay, that's our customer. Mm-hmm. You now have to change your hours, because you can't be locking yourself up at from 6 on, because, you know, that's what the old hours you used to work. You have to now also do the same thing.
Yeah.
We have to respond to our customer base. So that's really important to all small business owners out there at the moment. There's been a structural change out there in the way we live our lives, the way we live our working lives. And we, the vendor or the servicer, we must adapt to what they're doing. Yeah?
Absolutely.
And that's a very, I'm glad you raised it, because it's a really important point. It happened in my own business. And it doesn't always suit us, but I keep saying to my guys, well, you're going to have to take your time off between 3 and 6 yourself, or 3 and 7 yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's just how, it's how we got to roll.
And it's really, and you know what? And it's interesting, because I made the assumption that, oh, no, God, no one's going to want to work. Well, you know, when we went to this 2 shifts, I went, God, no one's going to want to do the late shift, because it finishes at 9:30 at night. Well, how wrong was I? Lots of people wanted to do the late shift.
100%.
Yeah, because we have mums who go, well, actually, getting into you at 7 is just a nightmare for me. But if I can work 3 till 9:30, brilliant, because I've dealt with my kids during the day and done all that sort of stuff, and I can work at night. So people just want to do that night shift, and then they've got the day to themselves. Uni students, but actually lots of people. And we're really flexible with the customer. Right, we're super flexible with the customer care team. So somebody will go, oh, I'll do late night shifts this week, and yeah, next week I'll do the morning. And I think the more flexible you can be with people, the more they take ownership for a start, because that's what you need them to do. But it's just a new way of working.
So how does Flora and Fauna, I mean, and I went through this same process myself, beginning of the COVID period, when we pretty much made everyone work from home.
Mm.
How does your business, Flora and Fauna, make sure that no one takes the piss? I'm going to tell you, they're working from home, they're working from allegedly from 3 till 9.
Yeah.
How do you make sure you get productivity and as I said, no one takes a piss? I mean, do you have a process? What is it?
So there's a few things that we do, and we've learned ourselves over the years. So we've had some good hires and some bad hires, reality, like every business. But we really give people ownership for their area. And I think if you can stop treating them like children, then they won't behave like children. And so for us, what I've said is, look, you figure out how you work, how you want to work. If you want to come in, you can come in, because the warehouse team are in, the customer care team are in. So if you want to come in, you can come in. Equally, if you want to work from home, work from home. But our expectations are this. So we're not in, I don't care whether you're sitting at your computer for 12 hours a day, but if you're not producing anything, that's not 12 very useful hours.
How do you check that? How do you check the productivity? What do you?
Oh, so we're really clear in terms of expectations. Right. So some may describe me as a control freak, but
we've got to control it, 100%.
We've got to control this, and we know what we need to deliver. We're a small team, so we're not, you know, and I've worked in large businesses where you've got fat. You've got way too much fat in the business. We don't have room for fat, so everybody has to deliver. Something we have done, actually, which I think has been really helpful, is we've introduced a Slack channel. And this was down to wonderful Justine in the team, who said to us when she arrived, she goes, we should have Slack. And me just went, no, I don't want Slack. Anyway, it's been great, because what we've found now is the team are talking amongst themselves. And particularly when we get customer care issues, one of the team will put it on Slack and go, hey, does anyone know anything about this? And lots of different people.
Internally, yeah.
Internally. Yep. Go, oh no, this is the answer.
So you got let's call it an intranet, old school intranet.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So we have one called Ask an Advisor. So yeah, but the same. And what's interesting about it is that they all them building their own community, and you have a bit of a chat to each other too, because they might all be working from different places.
That's it.
And they get up and say, oh yeah, I saw that problem, and this is how I solved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what we do. It's like someone's got an issue, but. Probably we've got a decent bunch of brains in here. Someone's probably going to have the answer.
But do you facilitate it, monitor it, or do you just let them go?
Let them go.
Yeah.
Let them go. You can't. There are some things you can have control of, and there are other things that's like, no, just run with it.
Do you read it? Do you personally read it? Because I'm on Ask an Advisor. So when a question goes up on our Ask an Advisor platform, which is similar to what you're talking about, I read every one of them. Because I actually want to know what they want to know. I'm looking at things, and then if I don't see a response quickly, I get on to the guys. Our customer service people internally, and I'll say, you need to respond quickly because that's been sitting there for too long without an answer.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I read every one of those.
I read them all as well because it also informs you. So when the team are saying, God, I'm not sure what to do about this skincare, or I don't know what advice to give, to me that goes, well, we need to get some training on that then. So it informs you in terms of, well, that's a problem. Well, is there a bigger solution to that rather than just someone going, here's the answer? It's like, well, how do we make sure that that question isn't even answered because that person actually knows? So, yeah, I read everyone as well.
I've built ours into a library now. So I'm actually putting it in a category so that
– that's a really good idea.
At some point in time, you don't have to ask the question. You can just go into then look under the heading of – in my case, finance. Like you look under the heading of owner-occupier, more than 70% LVR. That's just technical stuff. But then there'll be 20 questions that have been asked and 20 answers. So it's already libraried. I find a really good intellectual property.
Yeah.
Ownership of this is like really valuable because every single question that's getting asked out there in the marketplace, and we've got a couple of thousand people sitting out there in the marketplace, and you know at least 150,000 customers, I'm hoping I can build a diary of all this. I guess what this is really important. Julie's here telling us these are really inside secrets of how you run successful businesses with minutia. Like this is minutia stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very important. And these things do get me excited too. I'm sounding very excited at the moment, but we're both getting very excited about this stuff. But by the way, at an intellectual level, you've got to make it exciting for yourself. If you think this is boring shit, then you will not succeed as well as you want to succeed in business if you have big goals.
Yeah.
You've got to have big goals, but you've got to be – big goals require lots of effort in the minutia. Don't just have big goals and say, oh, I'm the big thinker here and it's all going to happen. You've got to say big goals. As soon as you've got big goals, that happens by the little things, what they call the one percenters. And I hate hearing it, but that's the truth. The one percenters are the important things. And these are examples of the one percenters.
Yeah.
How can I get more out of this Slack environment or so-called Slack or, in my case, Ask an Advisor? So – yes, have an Ask an Advisor. Good idea. Have a Slack platform. Okay, there's questions coming in. How can I turn those questions into something that's more valuable to me? Well, I'm going to at least read them, find out what's going on in the business, which Julie does. She reads it, all this stuff. You, the proprietor, you've got to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's my next leverage point? Oh, maybe I can start to put that into categories. Maybe it's something I now know that the rest of the marketplace doesn't know. Am I building something? Then you can go back to your suppliers and say, listen, my customers are asking for this and you don't supply it.
Yeah.
How do we change the product?
Yeah.
They're the one percenters.
They're the things you're constantly asking yourself. You're constantly asking yourself, what can I do better?
Do better. And that's the whole point. Yeah. You do that with the plastic example you were just talking about before.
Yeah.
So, I'm getting too excited. I've got to pull back a bit now. So, can you just tell me, I want you to tell me, I mean, we've got some great products here on the table, but you've got, as you said, 8,000 product lines, 8,000 SKUs. For flora and fauna, like where are you going to take this to? I mean, you own it yourself now. You don't
100% owned by me. Yeah. Yes.
No investors.
No.
So self-funded the whole way through.
Self-funded.
Right.
Self-funded.
So where to from here?
Where to from here? So we're at a really good size. Not really good. We.
How many countries are you trading in?
One. So Australia mainly, but we sell globally.
Yep.
So we sell globally. So anyone from anywhere can buy from us. Interesting with COVID, that's all changed a bit because for a while we couldn't even get parcels out of the country.
Right.
So that's all shifted a bit. But largely in Australia. I think we've still got a long way to go in Australia, because I will talk to people who should know us and they go, I don't know who you are. And I go, okay, well, you should know who we are. So there's still a lot of work to do in Australia.
In growth,
yeah. We still have more product to bring on, for sure, because there are some areas. If people talk to me about natural deodorant now, as an example, I'm like, oh, my God, we've got every deodorant under the sun. Another deodorant paste is not going to change the world, so don't talk to me about that. But then there are other categories where I go, well, that's really interesting.
Do people pitch to you? Is that how it works?
All the time. Yeah, so we've actually, I think this is something that we've changed over time. So when people used to come to us about products, we just used to send them through the customer care inbox. Anyway, as we've grown, we've gone, well, that's just crazy, because that's just ending up it's not ending up being focused on customers, it's focused on suppliers, so that's silly. So now we have a separate buying email where suppliers pitch into that. And we look through it and we go, well, that's interesting, let's talk a bit more about that, or that's more skincare. So we're not that interested in that. So there's lots of stuff that comes through there. So part of it is pitching, but also part of it is me. And I did it on the weekend. Actually, I have a little trick. If you really want to get someone's attention, email them on the weekend.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
I email them Friday nights.
Yeah. And they're not. Don't email them Monday. Nightmare. Silly time to email them. So, and I was after, I've been working. Part of this is real work as well, just because we're reasonably big in our space, but it's still hard work to get some brands on board, because some of them don't trust online for a start, and some of them just don't want to work with us. They just want to do their own thing. So, and there's one that I've been nursing for, 3 years now. Anyway, they've got a new CEO, and I'm like, brilliant, new CEO, new thinking. So I emailed him on the weekend, and we got a hit. So we've got a conversation this afternoon. But you've got to be relentless, yeah. But in a really smart way as well. Don't just keep hammering them down, because it's the same with us. If we get people buying emails coming in and someone's going, just a reminder, it's the quickest way to go, I'll just file that.
Yeah.
So be smart.
Yeah, I mean, I get people do that to me too, by the way. I mean, like, it's 100%. Like, if people keep coming at me from every direction, and just to some extent, they've got to be clever. If they come at me in a clever way, I'm more likely to respond to it.
Yeah.
In the interest of time, I've been asking you lots of questions, but do you have a question you would like to ask me? And by the way, I have to preface that before you get into it. I want to say to everybody, Alexandra Sloan, who's the director of marketing at Facebook and Instagram, puts this lady up as or Flora and Fauna as one of the best case studies for the use of social mediums. And she's always wrapping them. So do yourself a favor, go to the Instagram or the Facebook page and have a look at Flora and Fauna. You may want to buy, you may not want to buy, but that's irrelevant. Just go over there and have a look about how this lady operates her business in those two mediums. So what is your question?
Thank you.
No, but they do.
Yeah.
She uses you as a case study all the time. Notwithstanding, I did something with you and a number of others for Facebook a little while ago. But she's always talking about you to me, because I talk to her all the time. So in fact, she did I now remember she came in here and she did a Facebook actually did a podcast with me, and she talked about you.
Yeah.
Not you, but Flora and Fauna.
Fauna.
Yeah.
That's totally. Brilliant.
And she's lovely, Alexandra. She's great. She's great value. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what is your question?
So my question to you is, we're at a great size, but we want to go bigger, further, more. And we're looking at a few things, one of which is international. And that's a whole different beast.
Mm.
So if we were to take a brand internationally, what would be your best advice in getting started?
The only experience I've had having an international brand was in a technology business that I was involved in. And whilst we were really quite successful here in Australia in terms of our technology, it was way ahead of everybody else. And it was a branded technology. I tell you about the mistake we made. We tried to be everywhere. And it was there was demand pull for our product big time. We had some great tech titans around the world who used our product. Pretty much all the tech titans used our technology product. Security as a security product, but sort of deep, deep, deep security. But our mistake was to get overexcited, go and raise a whole lot of money and go to too many places.
Mm.
The thing that worked the best for us was actually picking one place. In fact, we picked one place in Singapore, and we built a really good base in Singapore, and then we got really good reference points in Singapore. So we had a really good customer in Singapore, well-known globally in our space, well-known globally. This particular customer was a global leader in this particular type of expression of technology. I can't really talk about what it is because we ended up at NATO as well. So, you know, it's a real heavy security product for technology. But nonetheless, the thing we did well was when we concentrated on this one client in Singapore, and one, in other words, one geography, and put all our resources in that one geography.
Yeah.
Where we stuffed it is that we tried to be everywhere then, because everyone then started coming and saying, oh, yeah, we can do this, we can do that. But we didn't have enough resources to do it.
Yeah.
And that's not just money. It's not just people. It's just infrastructure. We didn't have the infrastructure. We could deliver, yes, because we manufactured the stuff in Taiwan, but we could deliver. But that wasn't the issue. It was about just being able to deal with stuff, price stuff, just general infrastructure, just how the business was rolling. And that sort of thing takes years and years and years. So I would say to you, if you were going to do this, I would pick one region.
Yeah.
And then build out from the region. You might pick North America. You might pick Europe. You might pick the UK. You might pick Asia. I don't know. But I would pick one region and build out slowly. I wouldn't go and raise a whole shitload of money and then say we're going to go global.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what we did, by the way, and it was a mistake.
Right.
We burnt the money.
Yeah.
Really quick.
Yeah.
But we had a whole lot of customers, but, like, we didn't have a lot in any one particular place. And then what happens in that particular business, by the time we got well-known around the place, other people said, shit, we can do that, and they started to try to copy us.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we had competition.
Yeah.
Now, our product was the best product in the world technologically, but it was also, therefore, it was also the most expensive because it was very complex. Others started to do dumbed-down versions of it, and so we lost the value of time, and therefore we got competed against. So you got to be careful of being everywhere and being looked seen as being everywhere and being really, really successful, and other people come and copy you, then actually concentrate on the particular zone. So I would just, for me, I would just go for one zone, and probably North America is probably the most obvious.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. For your type product, retail product.
Absolutely.
But I'd make sure I did all the research first. And I reckon having a North American partner is always a good idea.
Yeah. Because the reality is we don't know the market.
Correct. You got to have someone who can help you in North America.
Yeah, that's really good sound advice.
So maybe you'll find a partner, so maybe it's an investment partner, or maybe it's a venture capitalist who actually understands what you do and has bench strength.
Yeah.
Or it might be someone who you vertically integrate with over there. It could be someone who sells product on your platform who's a big organization. I don't know. But a partner is, I think, in outside, out of town, is the best thing to do.
Best way to go.
And just I would just go one region first. And pick a region where you can grow, you know, it's big. So big you can grow big.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like Singapore wouldn't be a good idea, but it was in our case, but not in your case. But, like, North America's a lot of people.
It's a huge number of people, right?
And if you can do well there, you've killed it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's awesome advice. Thank you so much, Mark. That's really good.
Thanks, Julie Mathers. Like, you have a great business. I'm really proud that you're an Australian an Australian an Australian lady has built a great business without really needing to tap into anybody. She's done it on her own. She's still got the same amount of enthusiasm and excitement as she had from the day she started.
Yeah.
It's environmentally conscious.
Yes. Yes. That's the way.
And has a very good purpose.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Mark. Brilliant to be here.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.